All right, so Commissioner Sweetman.
Thank you. I'm not sure my head is necessarily in anywhere near a better state than it was when we had started a break in terms of how to approach this.
I'm sorry, Commissioner, for interrupting you. I just meant to say at the start that if it would at all help, Ms. Copplestone could just introduce the tweaks that she's made to the since the working draft set, and that might provide some lubrication for you in terms of where to next. Yeah. Forgive the phrase.
Okay, sounds like a good idea. Thank you.
Sorry. Bearing in mind that information overload on conditions, I'll just try to keep some of the highlights. The first one being that there was some conversations with Mr. Van Bentham about the surveys and of the roads, you know, the road surface and how that might be addressed. Bearing in mind that it wouldn't be appropriate for KiRail to pay for damage that wasn't attributable to their vehicles. So in an attempt to address that, I've come up with a definition of earthworks and site establishment works to try and target those surveys to that initial, my understanding is that initial stage of bringing in the fill materials that are needed and disposing of those materials that aren't appropriate will be quite an intensive two-year period, and that's when the damage will happen. So I've tried to tweak those conditions now so that they refer to that definition, and therefore it isn't a requirement that extends out over a very long period of time whereby they're into operation and there's some construction happening on the site, but it's really not of a sort of substantial level that would cause damage. So that's one of those changes. I've included, if we go over the page to page 3, I have a new condition there, 10A. That's capital A. And in that condition, I am trying to capture those things that I think that are early actions for KiRail, which I would like to inform, that those inputs inform the detailed design, and that they are not intended to be certified, but that they are the information that feeds into that, into the detailed design, and that the council is aware, and can satisfy itself that those things have happened. And it's a bit of a range, the first one being the Mana Whenua Engagement Framework and the Design Framework, and then it kind of, some of the other things are a little bit more detailed. So I've moved the safety and design and the train operation simulation requirements to this new condition, and I've taken them out of Condition 9, which was matters to be included with the outline plan. So the intention of this condition is to capture those early deliverables, for want of a better word.
Would you like me to ask questions along the way, or save them up until you've gone through these?
I don't mind if that's, you know, I'll be guided by your preference there, if that.
So, okay, let's go back to then the roading one. So, remind me which condition we're on.
Sorry, so, I was explaining the definition, which sits at the at the front of the conditions.
Oh, it's all right. I understood that.
I was buying myself some time to find the condition. So 67 big B.
Yeah.
Is the condition where I've brought that in. Sorry. And 67 big A as well.
Right. And then the B, I'm just looking at the little B, then just does require those rehabilitation works to be undertaken, because that was going to be a question I had from the earlier set of conditions about, shouldn't that be a standalone requirement then part of the construction?
Yes.
Traffic management plan. Yes. Yeah, so that was good that's been captured. Okay, right. And then so 10A, I suppose along the lines of what Commissioner Pomare and I would be concerned about is the timing there of the Mana Whenua engagement framework vis-a-vis particularly the design framework as well. And ultimately, would it be your view that the Mana Whenua engagement framework might likely need to feed into the design framework, or that it be established through the Mana Whenua engagement framework how that might occur? So, yeah, I just wonder if there's a sequencing issue, if they can actually be provided concurrently, or given what Ms. Lindsay was talking about this morning, or does there need to be a sequence there as well?
Yes, so sorry. I've tried to provide for the sequence whereby the Mana Whenua engagement framework would be first and then the design framework. So in condition 30, that says that the engagement framework would be within 12 months, and then the design framework comes before detailed design. So,
but that doesn't say it comes before the design framework in condition 32A.
No, okay, yep, so I could make that more explicit.
Mm.
That the framework must come before the Mana Whenua engagement framework must come before the design framework.
Please continue.
Okay. Okay, the next one, if I take you to... the page numbering is wrong, so please don't use the page numbering. If I take you to condition 39, it's a very subtle little change there, but... the condition there said downstream flooding effects, and I've just amended that to flooding effects so that could capture any upstream flooding or ponding if that was to happen. I think we've talked about it already, but in the road network integration plan, what we've done there is in little B, we have brought over all the parts of the network that we think, that we think will need some upgrades or attention. And we've put those into that plan. Now, previously, they sat in the operational traffic management plan, but we have moved them there because we recognise that that's a tie-in, if you like, or a kind of an integration with that. So there's a long list there under little B. And so they've come out of the operational management plan. If we go over the page, so I'm on condition 50 there. If we go over the page to D, that's the new bit that we've put in there around trying to provide for if the ring road is confirmed and there is an opportunity to connect via Te Nau Road, that Key Rail could adjust their design to provide for that.
Or elsewhere,
yes, thank you.
So that's in response to Mr. Van Bentham's concerns there in particular.
Yes, and we had a discussion about whether we could make that more specific or not, but we didn't feel that we could at this point, for the same reasons that we've struggled with how this relates to the ring road and how, and, you know, the uncertainty and how we might provide for that through the conditions. So we had numerous iterations of how to provide for that, so it's a little bit subtle, but we kind of felt it almost had to be.
Yeah, it's an interesting issue, isn't it, in terms of we don't know what may be coming in the future in a lot of areas. The ring road is one of them. What might come out of regional consenting is another one as well. And having been involved with Transmission Gully for the last, I was going to say too long, but 8 years, and the number of 181 processes that have gone through that, I look at a condition like that and I wonder how much that can be within the scope of a notice of requirement in terms of condition one, in terms of a proposal that we've seen, and how much it is more appropriate should those changes occur in the future to be subject to a 181 process where there might be differences in effects that eventuate from them.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair statement. It's difficult to know where to balance that.
I understand the desire to give flexibility, but there's also the issue that we've been talking to about setting that effects envelope equally so as well. And can we actually know what the effects might be if there were new road connections that were put in place as a result of external changes?
Yeah, I think one of the difficulties lies that in that we are putting an awful lot of reliance on this road network integration plan to be everything to everyone. And I can see the kind of awkwardness with that. I was going to check back to see what the status of that is in terms of the kind of structural elements of the way the conditions are set up. And I'm looking back at condition one.
I mean, to some large extent, any new road connection that might occur from the perimeter road to the ring road might actually be more of a subsequent new designation process, even so.
Absolutely, yes. We had that discussion, Harriet and I had that discussion last night, that it's quite likely that it would require a designation because it would be a complex link because it has to cross a stream and the alignment of that road at the moment wouldn't be appropriate for heavy vehicles either.
Goodness. That's all I'm going to say. please continue.
Okay. I can see that I'm going to lose my thread. I don't know that there were...
There's your quality condition, and then you could circle back.
Okay, yep.
Through the design frame.
Okay, thank you, sorry. Nick's helping me gather my sequence again. I think I'll go to the design framework first, actually. So that is... it's a suite of conditions starting with 32 big A. And I've tried here to reflect the earlier discussions and to articulate that there's these key design principles which should be brought together so that I think it's not just that the community has clear sight of those, but also people involved in implementing this. The people involved could change over time, so I think that's a really useful sort of source document. And I've changed the language around design outcomes to design opportunities, and I think that's to reflect that in the material that QRL submitted, they used the language opportunities quite a lot in terms of opportunities for mitigation or opportunities for enhancement. And I guess I'd like to capture some of those, and that this might be the vehicle for doing that. So 32F has been, I've amended that to capture that the intention, as opposed to putting it in the condition this is going to be very confusing for you, sorry, but the 32F that we were talking about earlier with that list of principles and outcomes, yes, it's 32G now, that's the confusion, I think. So I've tried to explain the difference between the principles and the opportunities now and try to articulate those in a way that is a little bit more obvious and reflective of what they should achieve. In response to Commissioner Pomari's questionings around the particular mana whenua values, I've reflected that in design principles that would reflect those values and that opportunities would provide for that relationship of Māori to their ancestral lands, water sites, wahi tapu and other taonga as an opportunity for the design to reflect that. The other thing is I have taken out the reference to the Northeast Industrial Guide because I didn't think that was just a distraction and not getting us anywhere. But I'd like to say that these are intended to be a starter for a conversation with QRL, and in the conferencing session we didn't get into this detail because we didn't get past the principle of the framework, so we didn't explore these, and I guess I'm saying that if QRL were a little bit more convinced about this mechanism, that's something that we could have a further session on.
Well, I for one would welcome the opportunity for a bit of a nudge in that regard around the concepts that I was talking about, which is gathering the information into a compendium and then providing that as a resource to then consult meaningfully with mana whenua in that because of the disparate resources. But that it was an exercise in gathering the information and then identifying the opportunities that emerge from that information to add to that. So it's a completely different concept than was originally conceived. I think initially in the wording or the text, mm-hmm. when I was questioning Ms. Whitby. And so for myself, I would say I think that's worth a nudge by the parties, but I won't go any further than that. But I don't feel comfortable that you've been able to pick that up sufficiently in the time available, which is not a criticism, but...
Yeah, sure.
Just a couple of comments around the design framework while we're talking about it. So I'm quite for those, how the cultural environmental design framework has fed into management plans and the outline plan as well. With that cultural environment, did that form part of the notice of requirement and was put in place prior to that being confirmed?
Yes, so we had a version of the CEDF with the notice of requirement materials that were lodged. So there was this mm-hmm. kind of set of starter for 10 was in that we tried to shoehorn in here was in that document. It was very high level, which is probably appropriate for the stage it was at. And then it was picked up in the tendering process, and more detail was put to it. And the final version was very detailed, and it was the design principles, but in that document it was also the expression of those principles was also articulated in that document. So it actually was the whole package, which is just a little bit different from what we're proposing here. I think this framework is about the guiding document as opposed to the response to it as well.
Sure. I just thought I'd add, as being involved in that process too, that as I recall, in that process it began as an environmental design framework, and it was quite empty when we first saw it. And over time it morphed during the process into the cultural and environmental design framework when it picked up those elements. And I hadn't actually seen the final version of it until recently when I asked Ms. Copplestone to see it, but the version that ultimately landed with Ms. Copplestone well after, and it was completed after the notice of requirement, was far removed from the version that the commissioners had at the hearing time on Te Ahua Tūranga. Mm-hmm. So it was still further advanced than what we have now, which is no design framework at all, but I think the expectation from the team was that was to encourage that process, A, to start and then to be completed so that it could inform those later documents. And it is, in a sense, modelled on what some of our team have found to be a helpful process in there.
Thank you.
Thank you, that's really helpful. Did you have any more? Did you want to explore that any more? Or I can, I've got a couple, well, sorry, one more. In terms of my edits, I think I've already signalled this one actually, and that's in relation to the ecology, the surviving ecology condition around an assessment of ecological values, and picking up on the questioning around was my interim version of that condition sufficient that anyone could pick that up and understand what was required of them. We have put back in the things that we think should be assessed. And it's certainly not the intention to duplicate anything that might be done for the regional consenting process. We see this as being the information that will be required for that process, but that we would like that information to inform the detailed design. Again, it's about making those opportunities that are identified in the application a reality, and that there could be opportunities to improve things for the ecology that is there. So that is the intention of of that condition. And then there's just on the two train conditions, there's just little tweaks there to clarify that they are now documents that would be in that early bundle. And I think that's probably most of the changes. I won't have picked them all up, but I don't expect you will have either, so...
I have some fundamental questions other than conditions. Do you want me to carry on with those, Commissioner Sweetman, while, or do you want to continue with your conditions?
I well might share those.
I think she's saying go ahead.
So just before I forget, there is a question from Dale O'Reilly that was for Ms. Lindsay but will be directed to you. And it concerns the social impact assessment. And it says, although Kiwi Rail is yet to provide a cultural impact assessment from an iwi perspective, their social impact assessment in relation to Bunnythorpe largely focuses individually on those affected within the Bunnythorpe community. It doesn't provide any assessment of the effects on communities within the community of Bunnythorpe. And then there's a subdivision into Tongan, Methodist, Buddhist, family church, Cambodian school, community centre and rugby club and yoga communities. And is it not important to have a cultural impact assessment undertaken of the impacts on the community of Bunnythorpe itself?
Ooh,
would you as a planner, the simple question is, would you as a planner expect that level of subdivision of community to analysis?
No, I wouldn't, no.
Yeah. Okay. That's the answer.
Okay.
I have some questions going back to this jurisdictional question and your statement of the potential challenges at regional consenting phase. So that's around that concept. And in order to ask those questions, you need to have in front of you three documents. The first is Mr. Jessen's legal submissions.
Okay.
The second is the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management. And the third is the Infrastructure and Energy chapter of the One Plan.
Okay. Just might have to give me a little moment.
So a bit of a shopping list there.
I have the MPS.
And it's aiming at your... section called Issues of Jurisdictional Overlap.
Okay, sorry, I just need to get one plan up. Nobody carries that around. So, sorry, in relation to the one plan, it was the regional policy statement?
Regional policy statement, yep. Chapter 3, infrastructure and
yep.
So forth.
Okay.
And finally, if you could bring up in a separate tab on your browser the RMA and open section 176.
I'll do that on.
Okay.
So I'll make sure you get set up before you ask those questions.
Okay, it'll be easy, won't it? Yep. I'm done with the leap. So. Is there any? Okay. Okay.
Right. I'll ask these questions very slowly because
okay.
They are quite technical, but they are planning questions. So if you look at section 176 of the RMA, it tells us what the consequence of the inclusion of a designation is when inserted into a district plan. And it has, as Mr. Jessen described in his submissions, two consequences. It suspends the operation of Section 9.3, which is the rule prohibition framed in a positive form that you cannot contravene a rule in the district plan, as opposed to you can't do it unless there is an allowance of it under the regional plan, which is the regional, you know, how the presumption is different for district plans. So it suspends Section 9.3, and it also places a constraint on people's otherwise permissible uses of their land. Now, when we're assessing for the purpose of Section 171 the effect of allowing the activity, isn't it intrinsically limited by the consequence, statutory consequence of the designation, which is that all it does is say there are no land use constraints in a the district plan does not apply. In other words, there are no land use constraints. There is no prohibition. It doesn't have any regional consequences, and a district plan will not be dealing with what the regional council does, except in that jurisdictional overlap. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
So we are not really addressing, getting into the realm of in-stream values and all of those sorts of things, which are fundamentally regional jurisdiction, regional matters. But then, so to that extent, I think the argument that this is not regional consenting is a legitimate statutory interpretation. But then we get the submission by Mr. Jessen that we are to look in the framing, and that's the phrase used at paragraph 3.2.3, paragraph 65, the framing, in our frame, Horizons Regional Council's One Plan and the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management 2020. And I suspect that that framing is directed at in-stream values or something like that, because that's a lot of what the National Policy Statement of Freshwater Management is about. And so I'm struggling with this idea of what is called the limited assessment, and what a limited assessment in your mind would look like, particularly when a fundamental theme of the MPSFM is the effects hierarchy, which necessarily would require a comprehensive regional consent application for you to do the assessment that would be required for consistency with the effects hierarchy. So I'm just trying to understand the intellectual exercise that we've been invited to undertake in the absence of regional consent applications for things that are properly within the regional council's jurisdiction. Can you help me there? Mm-hmm.
I think there are elements of that national policy statement that are more than in stream, and there's the concept of ki uta ki tai, so from the mountains to the sea, and there's the clauses around integrated management, and that the effects of the use of land have an influence on freshwater. So I guess that's where the frame sits.
Okay, I get that.
Yeah.
So, but then if we do that exercise and we say, okay, so because we're thinking in an integrated way, we do need to have an eye to these relationships. If we look at, well, the first thing is, if you look at Chapter 3 of the Regional Policy Statement, recognising that that is less current than the MPSFM, but it is the current RPS, you agree under Policy 3-1 that existing rail networks are regionally significant infrastructure.
Yes.
And you agree that this proposal would, if approved, be regionally significant infrastructure also.
Yes.
And you agree under policy 3-3, which relates to the establishment of new infrastructure, that these factors appear to have been properly informing the site selection and choice of the site.
Yes.
And you agree that policy 3-4, based on Mr. Murphy's evidence and your own assessment, is consistent with that policy?
Yes.
So in terms of at least one part of the one plan, we've got complete consistency and with the direction of the one plan. Then if you look at the National Policy Statement for Freshwater, and your proposition is there will be significant challenges in consenting, and I wonder whether we can say that with any confidence for the reasons I'm going to ask you. If you look at the section, subpart 3, specific requirements, this introduces the effects management hierarchy and introduces an immediate suite of policies that are either now currently in the plan or will be imminently. And section 3.24, subclause 1, introduces the policy: the loss of river extent and values is avoided unless the council is satisfied that there is a functional need for the activity in that location and the effects of the activity are managed by applying the effects hierarchy. Correct?
Yes.
And if you look at subparagraph A, in light of your answers to my question on chapter 3, your answer to question, the first question in that policy is yes.
I just want to check the definition of functional need.
Oh, there isn't one.
Oh.
I might be wrong about that.
Yes, there is. Yep. Yeah. Hang on, I'd just like to check that. I think there's certainly aspects of the freight hub where there is a functional need to locate in the environment. Yeah.
And certainly there's a credible argument in light of your answers on Chapter 3 for someone to argue there is a functional need for that activity in that location.
Yeah.
So that box is ticked. The question then is, are the effects of the activity managed applying the effects management hierarchy? And that question is slightly more complex because, A, it requires quite a detailed application to assess that question. And Mr. Jessen has said in his submissions, I think correctly, that that would be a bridge too far to be trying to foreshadow that assessment. But if you look at the definition of effects hierarchy, what's interesting about it is it says, well, adverse effects are avoided where practicable. And obviously the words where practicable is an intensely contextual assessment. And how you would practicably avoid tributaries and create a rail platform is highly problematic. So let's just say they can't be, it's not practicable to avoid it. Then you get to B and it says where adverse effects cannot be avoided, they are minimised where practicable. So as long as, and it seems to me that if KiwiRail demonstrates that they are minimised to the extent practicable, you don't then get to the next level of the hierarchy effects assessment because they've done as much as is practicable when constructing the platform. So my question really is, isn't there an element of in the assessment, there will be significant planning constraints or significant challenges. A sense in which we are somewhat still overawed by the MPSFM and thinking about what it means with limited practical application, and it might be it may not be as difficult in respect of essential urban infrastructure as we anticipate.
I'm a little, I'm not sure that you can stop at B.
Right.
And I wonder if that actually means that there's a subset of effects that you can minimise, but there may still be other effects where you need to follow the cascade down.
Right. So you don't say, if they're minimised where practicable...
That's where you stop.
That's where you stop because you've done it to the extent practicable.
I think there's signals that you go down the framework because when you get down to D, you're talking about the sort of the residual effects. So to use an analogy that Nick used about the sieve.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like you're stopping at the big stones and there's some other things.
Well, it may be right, but I just think that you're inviting us to look at the MPSFM to say, well, are there any showstoppers? And when I look at, say, well, let's say we've immediately got policy 3.24, I could certainly say with some confidence there's a credible argument that there is a functional need for the activity in that location. And as to management effects hierarchy, this would require a level of sophistication and understanding of the complete application to fully analyse it.
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
Yes, and you've been put in that difficult situation because you don't have that assessment. If Kiwa had provided that, we might not have to have the conversation about what happens next. Because if that information had been provided up front, we might have information to show that we can satisfy A and B.
Yes, except can we characterise it as an information gap in respect of a process that does not require the application of regional consents? If the effect of a designation is only to suspend the plan, district plan, can we properly say that there is an information gap?
I think the gap is in your recommendation process. So maybe not when it gets to the putting it into the plan. The gap is in the process you have to go through section 171.
Right.
So, the precursor step, if you like.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. In your information gaps list, which is... I think your section 1.7. The first thing I noticed is that Mr. Than's recommendation for a operational thing isn't in that list, even though he was quite firm that we needed one. Do I take it that you were not convinced of the need for that?
No, don't. Please don't take that. Please take this as me responding in a short time frame.
Right, that's okay. Yeah. All right. I just wanted to be clear whether that was deliberate or not.
No, it wasn't.
And in terms of flooding effects, I understood Mr. Arsenault to say that he was satisfied conceptually that the basic assessment that was there was sufficient to satisfy them that those effects could be avoided. Not that they were, because that's ultimately the consenting phase, but that they were capable of being avoided using that technique. Did you think there was still something left?
My understanding is that Kirrell have set out the steps that they'll need to go through.
Yeah.
To do that assessment, and that was set out in that appendix to the flood assessment report, which was the things we kind of tried to bring in to the condition we had on the stormwater management framework.
Yeah.
I think that Mr. Arsenault, he didn't emphasise this necessarily in his conversation with you last week, but it is in his evidence that there isn't a lot of information about I've just zeroed in on the flood, filling in of the floodplain, not the other things in that long list of potential effects, but I think his comments were also influenced by seeing the photos of the flooding, that it's going to be, a little bit, it could be problematic to address that and that those effects might need off-site mitigation, which doesn't mean that's a fatal flaw. It just means it's another area where there's some work to do in the next stage.
Is there any value in a condition that addresses natural hazards?
I was going to look to see. By natural hazards, you mean?
Erosion and flooding downstream. Damaging other properties.
So we kind of had that a little bit more in the first set of conditions that I put forward. We had that framework, and again, there is an overlap with natural hazards and the distinction between the responsibilities and the RPS. I read it, and it's very subtle.
Mm. Well, I can sort of understand why he thought that was a territorial authority function,
yes,
as well.
Yes, well, I think we did, and the reason that we stepped back from that was also that the council felt satisfied that all those things would be picked up in that next stage. In terms of a condition, I think that a condition we had have that in there. And which that's why I said in my summary today that I could be persuaded either way on that.
Mm.
Yeah,
I think I'd like you to think about that a bit more, because that might be something that properly is in there. I'm not sure there's much value in asking questions about some of those other gaps. I thought that the conditions, though, that Ms. What was the woman's name who was the air quality expert?
Ryan.
She had been satisfied with the conditions now as they were, so that, in a sense, even though the gaps were there, the conditions would do the job. Is that true?
Yes, Ms. Ryan and I spent a lot of time on those conditions, and I was very much reliant on her expertise to kind of to fill those gaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and I do appreciate this has been extremely difficult because of the overlap and jurisdictional issues. There's no criticism there, but thank you. No, so I can I hand Ms. Copplestone back to you, Ms. Sweetman? After that journey?
She's gone to sleep.
You can, yes. And you have traversed a lot of what I was going to in a slightly different way, in terms of, I suppose, to some extent, what Kiwi Rail are proposing and not applying for the regional consents concurrently is the risk of future Section 181s and changes to the notice of requirement, which is not a question, it's more of a statement again. Going back to the conditions, things which are irking me slightly. One is in terms of the community liaison forum. And particularly condition 17B about ensuring that the community liaison forum is provided with opportunities to provide feedback. I suppose what's the little evil person on my shoulder is saying, well, how could that be interpreted? And could that mean the provision of an opportunity is they're given it for, people are given it for an hour to provide comment, and is that meaningful, and is that what's intended by that condition? Or are you intending by that condition that it would actually allow for meaningful input over a period of time that would give them an opportunity to feedback?
It's absolutely the latter, and I think I could probably improve the certainty of that by removing that word opportunities. The things that the documents that the community liaison forum would be invited to provide feedback on are that the list there. The word opportunities has become redundant, I think.
Well, I'm more concerned about the time that, the opportunities is a concern.
Yeah.
But then certainty that they'll actually have sufficient time to review them, consider them and provide feedback as well, if that's what is anticipated. Well, certainly C says that, any feedback is recorded and reported back. So if we go back to what Ms. Lindsay was talking about, the engagement spectrum, ensuring it's just not an information provision, but an actual genuine opportunity to provide feedback. And certainly that's come quite clear through the submissions that we've heard, that the community want that opportunity, meaningful opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment that could be, there could be some more specificity about that timing. I'd need to take Ms. Lindsay's advice about it's kind of difficult, and also I don't want to be check my words here.
Prescriptive.
Yeah.
My brain, that might not work, and I understand that as well. Other community liaison forums, for example, occasionally have had as a first requirement the need or the condition imposed to create a terms of reference which sets out procedures on how they operate, which could have, for example, timeframes included in it. So just something to have a think about is you're just providing that meaningful opportunity.
Okay.
I did wonder about the need for conditions 33 and 34 in terms of site investigations, given these are a requirement of the NESCS and apply in addition and above to any notice of requirement.
Okay, so those weren't my conditions, and we had a conversation about
Miss Bell, I'm sure you're listening.
We had a conversation about whether to take those out, But given I didn't put them in and they were volunteered by Kirail, I didn't want to take them out without having some understanding of why they were put in. So I've left those there.
Well, Miss Arthur Young and Miss Bell can consider my question there then. You've addressed that question. I was going to, in terms of 46A, the original condition as recommended had that Kiwi Rail had to close the level crossings, and I wasn't sure that was actually within their power, but I see you've addressed that issue.
Yes, sorry, that was one of the last minute edits that I didn't mention earlier.
In the construction traffic management plan, so I'm looking at N, no, I'm looking at M and P. So that CTMP requires a process for preparing a traffic management communications plan. But what is the purpose of that construction what is it, and when does it need to happen? And does it, when it's prepared, does it need to be implemented?
Okay, so I picked up on this too. Again, that wasn't my wording. You know, I had intended to do something about that because I think that traffic management communications plan would probably be captured by the construction engagement plan, the intention of it. So I was intending to remove that, but it was I hadn't. I don't think it's necessary, and there isn't any specificity about what it is or what it does.
And then condition B in terms of a construction lighting management plan. Again, I just think that needs a bit of attention.
Okay, that was one of mine. I'll put my hand up to that one. That came out of, and you didn't hear from our lighting expert, but one of the matters that he raised in his report was the potential for headlight sweep. During, and so we were trying to make provision for that to be addressed. And so that's why that's gone in there.
My concern there is the requirement for the CLMP to address compliance with the standard, how it's achieved. That probably needs to be a standalone condition, that any construction lighting complies with that particular standard.
Yes.
Standard. Were there anything in the CMVMP or the ONVMP that you wanted to take us through?
Ooh. I apologise if I cover ground that you've covered with Mr. Lloyd.
Is there anything additional to what Mr. Lloyd said to us this morning that you think is worth bringing to our attention?
Basically, I'll go with concepts rather than detail.
Did you talk to them about that?
So basically, I've tried to, wherever there is a hard limit or a standard, I've tried to extract that and have that sitting separate. Picking up on the conversation with the Commissioner Marson about the wording of the operational noise and vibration management plan. We've made, sorry, it's not that condition, it's condition 85C, little d. I'll just let you go there. So condition 85, yes. Big C, little d, we've taken out the reference there to the future noise contours, and hopefully we've captured the much more succinct wording that you put to us there, and without the need for the figure showing that future noise contour. So that's a change I've made following the discussion this morning.
That looks good, other than that it perhaps it also needs to include the NIMT noise and anticipated NIMT noise.
I think we had already provided for that earlier.
Okay, no, that's all right.
So we didn't accept that was excluded from one of the earlier conditions.
Just a point there that it's not explicitly excluded, given that this notice of requirement doesn't, as I understand it from Dr. Charles, Ms. Bell and Seth Young, that relocation of the NIMT is going to be through a separate notice of requirement process. Is it better to be explicit that it does rather than implicit that it does?
Yes. I'll make an edit to that effect.
Just to address what Mr. Lloyd was concerned about, should we agree?
Copplestone's very excited at the prospect of doing more work on conditions.
I was going to make a smart comment about being the only one who still has homework, but anyway, no, apart from Kira, in our team anyway, maybe.
I think that's might be me. Obviously, these are a work in progress, and we will be hearing from KiwiRail in due course. And certainly from my perspective, and as you've already suggested, continuing to work with KiwiRail in advance of their closing statement would be incredibly helpful, particularly in understanding areas of difference and the reasons behind those areas of difference is invaluable for us. And obviously we haven't seen, and you haven't seen, the recommended condition suite that's been worked up with PowerCo. So that would be incredibly helpful to be able to see that too. Just desperately scrolling through conditions, different versions of conditions, seeing what comments I've got. That's, well, move to Commissioner Pomare, Commissioner Mackinson, and I'll just continue scrolling and I might come back to you.
Thank you, Commissioner Pomare.
Kia ora. Tēnā koutou. Tēnei te mihi atu ki a koe mō tō tuhinga kōrero. Can I just begin by reiterating the sentiments of Commissioner Marston and thanking you also for the clarity and quality of your report, which I've found extremely useful in trying to navigate my way through what has proven to be a very challenging minefield of issues related to this proposal. So I just wanted to acknowledge you for that and thank you for the quality of your report. Many of my questions have been addressed, but certainly in relation to the cultural effects, I do have some questions that have sprung to mind as I've been listening to you respond to questions from other commissioners. And I also have some sort of residual questions in relation to your original report. I'm just going to bring your statement up as well. Going back, though, to your original report, just to kick things off, you do note there that that the absence of a cultural impact assessment has obviously made it extremely difficult for you to be able to provide a sufficiently informed assessment of cultural effects, which we understand this is an issue that's been highlighted throughout the hearing. And consequently, you haven't been able to assess whether the proposed mitigation measures offered by KiwiRail are appropriate either. And you mention the need for cultural impact assessments to try to address this information gap, and also the fact that the appropriate people to be doing that are, of course, Mana Whenua. And KiwiRail have acknowledged this too. Or a person endorsed by Mana Whenua to undertake that exercise. But you haven't gone so far as to recommend a condition requiring cultural impact assessments to be developed because those conditions can't obligate respective tangata whenua groups to endorse or engage, as you put it, in those processes. So my question for you is, are we not in the exact same position in respect of the Mana Whenua engagement framework condition, in the sense that it similarly obliges Mana Whenua to endorse and engage in the processes outlined in the Mana Whenua engagement condition in order to ultimately provide for Mana Whenua values. Do you understand the question, or shall I put it another way?
I understand the question.
Good.
It's a very good question. I think we can only be satisfied that Mana Whenua haven't had their hands forced if they come forward with the conditions that reflect how they want to take this forward, given that there isn't a cultural impact assessment. So I think those conditions are fundamental, but those conditions as endorsed by mana whenua are what are fundamental. Yeah. So which is why I made the comment that I tweaked around the edges but didn't think it was my place to start putting my expectations into those conditions.
Mm.
So I Kiwi, I'll have a right of reply, obviously, and I think we're all hopeful that through that process and the discussions that I understand they've been having, that they can provide that certainty that can be relied on.
Mm. Thank you. I think, and I'm sure, and I'm hopeful that we will have a bit more certainty by the time we get to the end of this process. But if we don't, if we end up in a situation where there is actually no certainty of a clear commitment from the mana whenua to engage with KiwiRail over the development of the mana whenua engagement framework, to what extent, if any, can that condition, which is the primary condition, be relied upon to adequately address cultural effects?
I don't think it can. I think if it doesn't have mana whenua's endorsement, then it can't be relied on, because we are putting our faith in that mechanism to capture the effects and how those effects will be resolved. So I think without it, you have a gap, and so you have a gap, and you would have to think hard about how going into your recommendation process with that gap.
Mm. Thank you. That's helpful. Conversely, if we do have certainty of at least at a minimum level that the respective tangata whenua groups are prepared to commit to engage in the process around the development of that framework, to what extent would that address your concerns, your remaining concerns around the uncertainty of cultural effects, which you've addressed at paragraph 31 of your statement today, as one of the key remaining residual issues of uncertainty? Would that go some way, having that commitment from mana whenua to addressing those residual concerns around uncertainty, or are you relying on what comes out of that process, the identification of those values and then the identification of appropriate mitigation to address effects further down track?
I think that's a little bit hard to answer without seeing that the wording of what that condition said. So if that condition captured all the steps that had to be gone through to get that information, to understand it, to identify whether any mitigation was needed, if all of that was captured in that condition, then I think I would be... I think I would take some comfort from that. I think I would be, given where we are in the process, I think I would be comfortable.
Is that not the purpose of that mana whenua engagement framework?
Yes, it is, but I don't know how that's going, how that, yes. How much that might change. It might be strengthened, or it might stay the same, or it could be weakened. I don't want to comment on it, not having seen the wording of the vision that's put forward and endorsed.
Yes. Thank you. That's really helpful. Just check that some of these questions have already been asked, so just bear with me. Reflecting back on your Section 42A report, and it's probably not necessary for you to go to the section, but I am referring to paragraph 442 on page 133. It's to do with the district plan provision, Section 3, Objective 1, which requires the acknowledgement of rangitāne or manawatua tangata whenua within Palmerston North City. And it also alludes to policy 1.4, which states that the council must follow rangitāne nui a rawa in resource management processes which rangitāne or manawatū are involved in. And I was just wanting some clarification from you as to the extent that those district plan provisions are relevant to the freight hub proposal.
I think they are, and I would anticipate that what they are trying to achieve would be in the mana whenua framework condition.
Okay.
So it's around that having a role in I feel like I want to look at the provisions just to check what they say. Can you just direct me again to the paragraph?
It's section 3, your paragraph is 442 on page 133.
Yeah, that, I'm pausing because that says the council must follow
yes.
These processes. So that it's a little bit more difficult, I think, in the process that we're in now. I understand that they have that when resource consents come in, they discuss those consents and the issues that they have with them. They have a group that meets. So I think perhaps that's a little bit different from the resource management, this particular resource management process. So, sorry, that's why I wanted to check what the wording of those provisions said.
Well, that's helpful because I was trying to establish in my own mind what relevance it would have in terms of the freight hub proposal. What was your thinking behind the insertion of that policy reference there? Was it more to highlight the fact that rangitāne are acknowledged in the district plan as tangata whenua in relation to Palmerston North City?
Yes, it was that.
Okay. It was that. Okay, ka pai. Thank you. I think you've dealt with the sequencing issue adequately with Commissioner Sweetman, so I don't think I have any more questions around that. Right, that one's done. Okay, now, Just in terms of the conditions, the mana whenua conditions, we go back to condition. No, that's not even them. Here they are. Just condition 30, I think it is. Yes. Yeah. The requiring authority must prepare. So the requiring authority must prepare a mana whenua engagement framework. I'm just wondering whether, given that the engagement framework, the objective of it, I guess, is to recognise and provide for mana whenua values in the area of the freight hub. One would assume that the, and we know this by the way in which the condition has been drafted further on, that the mana whenua will be, that the framework will need to occur in collaboration with mana whenua, or preferably even in partnership with them. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and I think I don't know if where this is where you're going, but whether that is reflect. I think your question is,
yeah,
does the wording here reflect that? And I'd agree with you that at the moment it perhaps doesn't, or it doesn't. Okay. Yeah.
Do you think it should?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Because I wasn't sure whether it should, or whether it was deliberately worded that way because the onus is on the requiring authority, KiwiRail in this case, to actually take responsibility for preparing the framework. So I was wondering whether, in your view, it wasn't necessary, because we do later on in condition, what is it, 32, makes it more explicit that mana whenua will be engaged with to develop the contents of the framework. So your view is that condition 30 should explicitly reflect that requirement to engage with mana whenua, is it?
I'm just reflecting what I've said to you there. I'm conscious that we can't recommend a condition that the requiring authority can't achieve. So, I absolutely endorse that there's a partnership approach to developing this. But there's the awkwardness about a third party endorsement, yeah, even though that third party has the status under the treaty. So, I think it is the wording of these conditions is not easy to capture that.
Mm. Well, I did wonder about that, so that's helpful. So on reflection then, you're saying that it would be safer to stick with the current wording?
I think so.
Okay. The implications, I guess, would be the same. I think they are for the design framework. Yes. Just double checking. Te mana o te wai. I think we're nearly there. I think I've just got one final question for you. Just have to try and make sense of all this scribble. Now, in your Section 42 report, you do pick up the issue that was consistently raised by iwi in their submissions, on their desire for KiwiRail to establish an iwi working group, similar to that was established by Te Waka Kotahi in relation to the Te Ahua Tūranga project. But you've not gone so far as to seek that be imposed as a condition, although you are very supportive and encouraging of that idea, and you do recommend in your report that KiwiRail consider establishing a group of that nature, a reference group. I just wanted to clarify why you haven't gone so far as to recommend it as a condition of consent. Is it around your concern that you just expressed before about imposing conditions on third parties, or is it to do with the potential impact that might have in limiting KiwiRail's authority to implement its designation as a requiring authority, or is it for some other reason?
I do think that KiwiRail would have to be prepared to adopt an arrangement like that.
I
think the iwi working group is a similar aspiration probably to what is trying to be achieved through the Mana Whenua engagement framework. The language is different, but I think the desire behind it is probably very similar. It's to have a seat at the table and to work through to be part of the project's development. So I think KiwiRail would have to be prepared to adopt that working relationship.
Okay, I understand. Just checking to make sure I don't have any further questions of clarification. What was that one? No, I think my questions have been all adequately covered off now, so thank you very much, Ms. Cobbleston. Really, really appreciate your contribution. It's been very, very helpful. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Kia ora, Kath. Thank you. Ms. Mackinson, Commissioner Mackinson.
Good afternoon, Ms. Cobblestone. I would just like to add my thanks to the other commissioners for compiling the Section 42A report. It was exceedingly clear and very helpful in helping us make sense of the avalanche of information that we've needed to get our heads around. The only queries I had around conditions were in relation to that sort of consultation with foodstuffs and also the road safety auditing in the monitoring condition, which I picked up with Ms. Fraser, and I fully appreciate you wouldn't have had time to put your mind to that as yet. So if you do get the opportunity, that would be appreciated. But you're happy to hear? No questions from me.
So, Commissioner Sweetman, do you have any other further questions before we wrap up and do housekeeping?
I have no further questions, you'll be pleased to know. Thank you very much, Ms. Cobblestone, and just reiterate what my fellow commissioners have said. Yours and Mr. Percy's 42A was of a really high quality, easy to understand, and thank you for keeping us up to play in terms of recommended conditions, and no, your job's not done yet. Obviously. Thank you very much.
And thank you for your patience and tolerance with the conditions keep changing.
So thank you very much, Ms. Cobblestone. That was excellent, and you've done your profession proud. So we've got to now do some planning for the end of this process, and I understand the last date is the 15th. Ms. Arthur Young, representing KiwiRail, has indicated that she's kept content to circulate her material by the 12th. So my question to commissioners is, would you, like me, like to have that in advance so that you can digest it so that we can be well primed to address questions and so forth beforehand? Is that something you would like? All right, so Ms. Arthur Young, I assume you're still here with us. We would appreciate that opportunity. We don't want to suggest that the council's role is completely finished yet, in that we would encourage ongoing engagement around the conditions, and we would like to see in the final presentation of KiwiRail's case, perhaps where the major conditions, the differences lie, a tabular format which is council, KiwiRail, and an explanation of the difference, so that we can say we can focus on what matters and ascertain what the reasons for the difference are. For my part, in relation to the noise condition, I'm going to now say what I think is my understanding and what I'm interested, which is not in any way a representation of the panel's view, which will remain live and open to discussion throughout our deliberations. But as I understood it, Mr. Lloyd's particular concern about the inclusion of the NIMT was around its cumulative impact on environmental bottom lines, and that that should be particularly included in the assessment of the noise insulation when it's triggered, so that when you do the assessment, you consider all noise sources, including NIMT, but not necessarily that it would be used for the assessment of the noise boundary or the 65 standard at site. And although I understood that he prefers that view as well, I'm quite attracted to the bifurcation of those two, so that it is included for the purpose of noise insulation assessment, but not for the purpose of assessing the noise boundaries, if that makes sense. Because from my own personal view, I'm somewhat nervous about introducing controls on a designation that exceed the requirements of the district plan with its express provision excluding railway noise. And I don't think that's the intention of a designation to actually make more onerous requirements that the plan actually authorises. But that's my present view, so I would be interested in a bifurcation that partly addresses Mr. Lloyd's concern, but also thematically respects the nature of the predictions that Dr. Childs made. So I just put that out there, and not saying that that's a view that the other panel would have, but I would like to see, if you can't come to an agreement, what that bifurcation would look like. I'm just going to check with my commissioners, so whether with my other commissioners, as to whether there is anything they would particularly like to see, either in terms of the form or presentation of material. So, Commissioner Sweetman, do you have any other things on the shopping list?
No, I really said them before when I was talking, in terms of just, yeah, when we do see an updated suite, that it does have areas of agreement and disagreement, and where there are areas of disagreement, why. In terms of any specificities, I've probably already raised in terms of what matters I'd like to see addressed, particularly in terms of the staging and process of the management plans and outline plans in particular. Nothing further really to add that I haven't.
Commissioner Pomare?
Nothing further from me, Commissioner. I endorse what Commissioner Sweetman has said, and some of those issues of concern I share also. So, no, nothing further. Thank you.
Commissioner Mackinson?
No, I think you've got it covered, so nothing further from me.
All right, thank you. One other thought before it runs out of my head again. The framework, design framework, I would encourage people to capture those principles. I'm slightly attracted to the idea, if it's having that function that we described this afternoon, simply because I think KiwiRail in itself will have to at some point, if their designation is granted, stand back and reflect and say, we've got to bring this information into a coherent form for doing a whole range of jobs, because it has been such a iterative process that I think that that analysis will provide opportunities for further engagement and so forth with the community. So I really encourage that, and I think we've given you a heads up as to what that might look like. So,
Chair, I just wonder whether it might be helpful for a copy of that final version of the cultural and environmental design framework from Te Ahu Aturanga to be made available to the panel through you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry, I think there is an electronic copy. It will probably crash your system when it comes through the, but that's okay. I think at SharePoint or something like that, there'll be a way that we can get that to you.
If it's not too much trouble.
No. That's
all right.
Thank you.
Ka pai? All right. So everything is good, and the council team can relax, and we can look forward to the KiwiRail reply, which we hope will be in person, but hope is the operative word. Surely our Auckland friends will be released. I think your fringe has got longer, Miss Arthur Young.
Oh, hey, look, I must apologize the other day. I got such heat from the team for dropping my filter and just casually talking about my fringe to everyone.
Well, I think it's good to be like that occasionally.
Yes, it's pretty dire up here, sir, but I hope to see you all in person.
I'm not sure if you heard the story about how I never got back to Auckland, my wife rang me on the night of the closing of the hearing and told me that Case A and the infectious workman were the two people working on our sash windows in our house in Gray Lynn, and that she was not allowed to see me for another 3 weeks. So I haven't seen her for a month and a half.
Aucklanders and their renovations, right?
Yeah, so it's my fault.
Indeed.
Thank you. All the best. Thank you. We'll see you on the 15th.
Thank you.